Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, March 19th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Enlightenment, director who worked in prison adds perspective, from Urbana. After seeing men locked up for life for stealing pizza under California's Three Strikes program, Alan Williams felt there had to be a better way. The former prison employee thinks he may have found it in a two-story house on a quiet Urbana street, a stone's throw from his childhood church. Williams, 53, is the new director of Canaan Baptist Church's Men's Safe House. That stands for Substance Abuse Free Environment and has been quietly turning out success stories for about 24 years. Williams was recently hired after the retirement of Thomas Green, who served as director of the Faith-Based Drug Substance Abuse Rehabilitation Program for 17 of those years. "I like the program. It's structured and very disciplined. That's what most of these guys need," said Williams, who has been on the job less than a month. Williams retired 3 years ago from the California prison system, where he began as a correctional officer. He worked his way up to a supervisory role, responsible for about 11,000 inmates at Salinas Valley State Prison, a medium security facility in Soledad. With his background in corrections, Williams is able to enlighten the men in the safe house. "I tell them, you don't want to be on the other side of the fence, trust me." During Williams' career in California, former Governor Pete Wilson signed so-called Three Strikes legislation in 1994, which dramatically increased the penalties for offenders who received a third felony after the commission of two serious felonies. "I saw 22 institutions built in my career for a total of 34. In his opinion, the draconian program did not help recidivism. Voters apparently agreed because in 2012, the legislation was amended to make the third felony a violent or serious one to qualify for the 25 years to life. It also allowed prisoners to petition to reduce second strikes. Being a caseworker, you would read the police report and the court transcript and see the sentence and think, are you kidding me? You throw the book at a child molester and serial rapist, not the guy who took a slice of pizza and ran and got 25 to life because of his priors. In his current role, Williams is using his skills to try to get through to the men who live for 12 months in the house on Central Avenue, just north of Canaan Baptist Church at 404 West Main Street in Urbana. Williams is at the house during the day. Other employees spend the night with the clients. With space for 10, Williams said there are currently four men, ages 19, 31, 53, and 60, under the roof. None have been to prison. "These guys have a lot of downtime. We try to keep their minds focused. We do a lot of classes. In the morning, they have devotion, breakfast, and an hour of Bible study. They're also put to work taking care of any chores that might need to be done at the nearby church and school. The daily routine varies slightly, but the theme is to consistently keep the men occupied and focused on the goal of kicking their drug or alcohol habits. If they want to, they can leave. It's not a prison. If they walk away, you are out. And if you want to re-enter, you have to wait 30 days. It's hard. Every day is a challenge." Williams grew up in the community, one of nine children. His mother, Addie Williams, 86 of Champaign, continues to work for the Unit 4 school system. "I know about Safe House from keeping in contact with Mom. She has been a Canaan Baptist member since 1977. I was 13 years old when we started going to Canaan. We were one of the first ones there." After graduating high school in 1982, Williams served in the Army for 3 years, based at Fort Hood in Texas. The Army, he said, taught him discipline. Williams attended Hartnell College in Salinas, California, where he studied business law. He entered corrections from there. "After his retirement, he returned to Illinois to be close to Mom, plus my retirement goes a lot further, and I can enjoy life more." A former competitive runner, Williams is looking into ways to inspire his safe house charges to work out physically. In California, he was involved in starting a track club at the prison. "We were giving back to the community, teaching and coaching kids." And in a related article, man's key to his success is staying connected. Damon Rowell is pretty sure he'd be in a really bad place had he not found Safe House. "This place truly saved my life. I'm addicted to it," said the 45-year-old Urbana man who lived at Safe House for about eight years ago. Rowell is a poster child for the faith-based rehabilitation program sponsored by the Canaan Baptist Church in Urbana. Canaan's foundation has separate 12-month live-in programs for men and women that offer the daily structure of adult education, devotions, group therapy, personnel counseling, volunteer work, and weekly worship services. The women's program is only 5 years old. In existence since 1994, the men's program boasts an 86% success rate. Past graduates include a college instructor, an MTD bus driver, a radio personality, and many workers at the University of Illinois. Rowell is one of the latter. He works part-time at the U of I and part-time at First Presbyterian Church in Champaign for pay. He also volunteers on his days off, hanging out a lot at the house that brought him to sobriety. He likes the food there. "I talk to the brothers. I help out by giving them rides to the store or appointments, helping with chores. I will stay all night to give the employees a break." He lives in an apartment close to the Safe House because it makes him feel safe. "I could have lived farther away, but the pastor advised me to stay connected." A fellow Safe House client told him he was a fool to stay so close. That man relapsed. Rowell has not. "You got to stay connected," said Rowell, who called his year as a participant a challenge. He said the first 3 to 4 months at the house he was physically ill, going through withdrawal from the drugs that made him someone he did not want to be. He then went through a second phase of thinking about everything I lost as far as my job and relationships. As he became more healthy, he transitioned to his "where do I start now" at 37 phase. "It really changed my life. I got my relationship back with my kids." Originally from Danville, Rowell said he's brought at least 15 men to the Safe House. Not all have been as successful as him. "I'm joyful happy. I'm mentally happy. I'm physically happy. Canaan Baptist Church is a huge component of his happiness. I'm a greeter at the church. You don't feel shamed. They make you feel loved and welcome. I feel like this is my second home. Everything I lost, I got back." And from Urbana, HACC meetings on TV. Mayor wants sessions online and broadcasted. The Housing Authority of Champaign County may start broadcasting its board meetings after Mayor Diane Marlin urged the group to improve its transparency. In both Champaign and Urbana, public meetings of city and township councils, boards, and commissions are televised and provided on city websites. The HACC board doesn't do that, and Marlin said the city is looking into having Urbana Public Television intervene. It likely won't be ready for the next board meeting on March 22nd, but Marlin said UPTV Channel 6 could eventually air footage of the meetings after they conclude and provide the videos online. Marlin noted how the HACC board doesn't convene at a local city building where public meeting rooms are outfitted with broadcasting equipment. An incident from earlier this year led Marlin to call for greater HACC transparency. It started when she appointed Cunningham Township Supervisor Danielle Chenoweth to the authority's board. The board rejected the appointment, saying that Chenoweth is involved in an ongoing property tax exemption dispute between HACC and the township. Chenoweth responded by saying she had no hand in the township board decision that set the dispute in motion. Then she discovered that a special HACC board meeting was held without her knowledge, and a new HACC executive director was approved during it. This led Marlin to publicly criticize the special meeting and HACC's level of transparency. She also refused to withdraw her appointment of Chenoweth. The issue is now before the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's Office of General Counsel in Washington, D.C., which will decide if the alleged conflict of interest is valid. Chenoweth now attends HACC board meetings, but doesn't vote until the HUD decision is made. and from those who served, retirement included policing in Kosovo. Investigator went from FBI to military, police, UN posts, from Champaign. Sergeant Jim Morris endured gruesome scenes investigating war crimes in Kosovo. A rock thrown at his vehicle turned out to be a grenade. Earlier, when he was in the Air Force in the mid-60s, a nuclear bomb fell off a forklift and rolled past him into a water-filled ditch. Born in Indiana, Morris, 73, spent all of his life in law enforcement, both civilian and military, more than 54 years before an injury sidelined him. He started as a clerk at the FBI right out of high school in 1964 and was promoted twice. While working in the Jackson, Mississippi FBI office in 1965, Morris drove some FBI agents to the scene of a bank robbery where he dropped the agents off at the entrance to the bank and drove around the corner. Morris noticed a man sitting on the curb sobbing, saying, "They wouldn't give me any money." He summoned the agents, who arrested the unfortunate bank robber. Soon, he made a career change. Morris served in the Air Force as a military police officer at a Dutch air base in Holland from 1966 to 1969. At one point, a nuclear weapon rolled off a forklift. Morris said it was actually a safer situation than with a conventional bomb because the nuke was built with many safeguards. Morris then served as a patrol officer and field supervisor in Colorado and was named Officer of the Year in 1974. From 1976 to 78, he worked at Indiana State University as a police officer before heading to Danville in 1978 to work as a patrol officer from 1978 to 1987, and then in Paxton. In 1999, he retired from police work for the first time and joined the United Nations Civilian Police Force as a civilian contractor. He was sent to Kosovo as part of the UN peacekeeping force in the former Yugoslavia. When Morris first arrived in Kosovo, the Canadian Army was serving as security backup for the UN civilian police. In 1999, Morris and other UN forces located four murder victims along a wooden trail in Kosovo. This was an example of ethnic cleansing that was going on in Kosovo. Before moving the bodies, the police brought in a technician with a metal detector who found that live grenades had been placed under the bodies, set to explode if the bodies were moved. His unit also intercepted 50 AK-47 rifles being smuggled into the country. In the summer of 2000, the Canadian Army units in Kosovo were replaced by Norwegian Army units. The Norwegians had great food and knew how to cook. We could get steak or lobster for 5 Deutschmarks, the equivalent of $2.50 American. On another patrol in Kosovo, Morris and other UN police officers were driving down a street on a weapons raid when someone tossed a grenade at their vehicle. The grenade bounced off the hood of the vehicle and over the top of the vehicle, landing in the street behind it where it exploded. In 2000, he was reassigned to a civilian police force in East Timor. Following the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center, Morris returned to Illinois, where he became the chief of security at the control tower at Willard Airport in Savoy. He then worked for several small-town police forces. After a freak accident and a torn rotator cuff in 2017, Morris spent 8 months on disability and in rehabilitation. He decided to retire again, this time for good. And from Springfield, 2 years later, firewall on state voter rolls, a concern after 2016 cyber breach. With the Illinois primary just a day away, state election officials are beefing up cyber defenses and scanning for possible intrusions into voting systems and voter registration rolls. They have good reason to be on guard. 2 years ago, Illinois was the lone state known to have its state election system breached in a hacking effort that ultimately targeted 21 states. Hackers believed to be connected to Russia penetrated the state's voter rolls, viewing data on some 76,000 Illinois voters, although there is no indication any information was changed. Since then, Illinois election officials have added firewalls, installed software designed to prevent intrusions, and shifted staffing to focus on the threats. The state has been receiving regular cyber scans from the federal government to identify potential weak spots and has asked the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to conduct a comprehensive risk assessment. That assessment is scheduled but will not happen before Tuesday's second-in-the-nation primary. It's not something where you ever feel completely safe, Matt Dietrich, spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections. It's something where you feel like you're doing your best to protect against what could happen in a cyber attack. Federal intelligence agencies determined that the attempted hacking of state election systems in 2016 primarily targeted voter registration systems, not actual voting machines or vote tallying. Gaining access to electronic voter rolls can do as much damage, giving hackers the ability to change names, addresses, or polling places. Confusion, long lines, and delays in reporting election results would follow, all of which undermines confidence in elections. Cybersecurity experts say it's crucial for states to shore up vulnerabilities in those systems now, with this year's midterm elections underway and the 2020 presidential election on the horizon. J. Alex Halderman, director of the University of Michigan Center for Computer Security and Society, said many of the same weaknesses present in 2016 remain. I think it's only a matter of time before we suffer a devastating attack on our election systems unless our federal and state governments act quickly. The federal Help America Vote Act, passed 2 years after the messy presidential recount in Florida, requires states to have a centralized statewide voter registration list, but states vary in how they implement it. Most collect voter data at the state level and then provide it to local election officials, according to the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Illinois and five other states do the opposite, collecting voter registration data at the local level and sending it to the state elections office. A few others have a hybrid system. The chief concern surrounding voter registration systems and the growing use of electronic poll books to check in voters at polling places is how they interact with other internet-connected systems. Electronic poll books allow polling place workers to verify a person's registration and related information electronically rather than having to rely on large paper files. A downside is that the e-poll books might use a network to connect to a voter registration system, providing a potential opening for hackers. In other cases, the voter data is transferred from a computer placed on a device not connected to the internet. That computer is a potential weak link. Security experts say it must be secured and not subject to tampering. Experts with the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School said network-connected election systems are vulnerable to attacks and urged officials to take several steps to shore up security, including making sure the underlying server is not connected to the internet and that all changes are logged. Experts say a key component is that election systems can recover quickly in the event of an attack or even an equipment failure, limiting public disruption. Larry Norden, an expert in elections technology with the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, said the network connections make voter registration systems more vulnerable to hacking than voting machines, which are not directly connected to the internet. In many states, the Department of Motor Vehicles or some other state agency provides information to the voter registration system as a way to keep the records current. Some states allow voters to register and edit their information on a state website that is connected to the voter database. All of those provide possible access points that can open the door to hackers. Just understanding where the risks are is critical. Back to the front page, primary concerns. November 6th, it's not. But 8 months before we find out who'll call the governor's mansion home the next 4 years, there's a lot on the line locally in Tuesday's precursor to the general election. Will Monticello School's third attempt to win over voters go as well as Champaign's did 16 months ago? District officials sure hope so for the sake of some fifth graders at Washington Elementary, housed in a classroom built in 1893. The comfort of special ed life skills students among 8 high school classes held in an elementary building requiring a trip outside, and the health of anyone who uses the boys' locker room under Moore Gym, you don't want to know. Of the 178 public school structures in the 5-county area, 19 were built before 1924. 4 of the 19 are in the Monticello District. That's double the number in Unit 4. When I look at the district, our financials are solid. Our kids do well on their standardized tests. They go to college. They do well on the ACT. Our teachers do a great job. Our families are supportive. Our athletics and music and activities do great. The only thing that's left is facilities, and I think our students deserve better facilities. I think our parents deserve better facilities. After striking out with voters in 2014 and 2016, the district lowered its ask from $40 million to $40.9 million to $29.8 million, and from building a brand new high school to rehabbing the high school Washington Elementary campus. Even the pitch to taxpayers has been dialed down, with yard signs going from vote yes on previous ballot tries to simply vote, with a subhead of your voice, your choice. Says Monticello Ref 2018 spokeswoman Stephanie McLeese, the last couple of attempts were a little divisive, which isn't unique to Monticello. We agreed we had to get respectful of people's decisions. And from the sports page, Fun Under the Sun, Central, STM, and Centennial, Florida bound, from Champaign. Roughly 4 miles is all that separates Champaign Central and St. Thomas More High Schools. Yet their baseball teams are slated to meet more than 1,000 miles from either institution this week. The Maroons and the Sabres, as well as the Centennial baseball team, have trekked to Florida for their respective getaways from East Central Illinois' chilly, unpredictable weather. Both Central and STM are in Cocoa Beach, Florida, while the Chargers made their way to Port St. Lucie, Florida. Say goodbye to practicing in the gymnasium and playing in long sleeves, boys, at least for a few games. Probably several things. One is the warm weather. Maroons coach John Stab said, addressing what his players might enjoy most about a Florida trip that's been taking place for more than a decade. You're trying to get arms in shape, and if you can steal a week of warm weather, the kids always enjoy that. Centennial is in its 10th consecutive season riding the road south, while STM is a more recent addition to this party. That can also be said for the Sabres' first-year coach, Scott Runyon, who previously called Stab his prep coach. I've only heard good things about it, Runyon said of STM's Florida trip. It helps building that team chemistry that everyone wants. Though the Maroons and Sabres will hook up for a tilt this week, their other foes are relative unknowns. Stab said his crew will travel to the area to take on 3 different Florida high schools, all of which have been competing since the start of the calendar year. That'll pose a challenge for our kids, facing guys that obviously play year-round down in that warm weather, but also their season is a third over. Wins and losses aren't a major concern to Runyon as he helms his first team visit to Florida. He wants to garner a better feel for what sort of squad he'll carry into the rest of the 2018 campaign, while also allowing each Sabre a moment to shine if possible. It's more important to get everyone in and showcase what you've got. I think that's what we're going to focus on. We're hoping for competitive games where we can showcase our skills on both sides so everybody is in the competitive mode. Fierce competition is something with which Centennial coach Ryan Ramol is especially familiar this time of year. His Chargers first will meet up with Lutheran High School at Parker, Colorado. The Lions opened their season last week with a 33-1 triumph. And last year, Ramol said Centennial squared off against individuals committed to Florida State, Mississippi, and South Carolina. This comes as a result of working with Florida Coast Spring Training baseball camps, which runs such programs for high school and college teams. We've not shied away from competition. We appreciate it if they try to find a game that we should probably win and two games that are toss-ups, and then a game we would probably be expected to lose. All three local outfits are making this a family getaway as well, with parents able to travel alongside their sons. But don't be mistaken, the Maroons, Sabres, and Charges aren't visiting Florida for fun in the sun. There's plenty of business at hand. There's a lot of teams in our area that have been outside only once or twice so far. We're going to go after teams. We've prepared as hard as we possibly can, and the boys love to compete. Harold voices support for same-sex rights from Champaign. Republican Attorney General candidate Erica Harold said Friday that she supports same-sex adoption and foster parenting rights. Harold, an Urbana attorney who was in Champaign at a reception with Governor Bruce Rauner, rejected a position she has been alleged to have voiced as a contestant for Miss America in 2000 when she was 19 years old. "I don't recall that specific exchange that was alleged by those sources," she said during the appearance at the El Toro restaurant on South Neal Street. "But if I said it, it was absolutely wrong, and I couldn't be more clear. My position today is I support same-sex adoption and same-sex foster parenting. I'm running for Attorney General because I want to make sure that everyone is treated fairly under the law." Harold is running against Burridge Attorney Gary Grassow in the Republican primary for Attorney General on Tuesday. She said she was optimistic 4 days before the day most Illinois voters will go to the polls. "I feel really confident going into Election Day. We've had great endorsements from newspapers throughout the state, great endorsements from Republican organizations, and a lot of grassroots enthusiasm. So I'm excited to get into Election Day and to see who my general election opponent will be." Rauner today called Harold one of the great new future leaders for the state of Illinois. She's the primary reason that Lisa Madigan decided not to run, because she knows how good Erica Harold is. And from the opinions page, a letter to the editor: arming our teachers won't solve problem. Speaking of untested ideas being hailed as a great hope, arming school teachers surely qualifies. The good guys with guns stayed out of the Florida school until the shooting was over, but we want our teachers to stand instead. If a shooting occurs, don't the teachers need to be concerned with the many panicked students in their charge, rather than looking through a purse or briefcase for that handgun they hopefully remembered to bring that day? How many gun enthusiasts want to volunteer to go up against some psycho with an AR-15 and big clips, armed with only an ordinary handgun? How about instead we try an idea that's already been tested: banning assault rifle sales, period. Mark Sandrock, Champaign. We'll take a short break now, and we'll return with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, March 19th. Please stay tuned.